Mr. La Follette.
Ladies and gentlemen, it may be helpful if we begin tonight by speaking of the last war in terms of the concrete experiences of one family. 22 years ago, a storm of abuse raged around my father. His name was made a word of hatred. His picture was torn from public places. He was burned in effigy. His only offense was his profound conviction that the underlying causes of that world war were the commercial and imperialistic conflicts of European states. He voted against war in the face of personal abuse such as few men have known. He died firm in the belief that he voted right, voted for the best interests of America. Millions now agree that he did. The bitter experiences of those days is burned into many American hearts. We now know that there are steps which lead one by one to war. A peace-loving nation like ours cannot be led into war overnight. A democratic nation goes to war because it takes the steps that lead to war. Once those steps are taken, war becomes inevitable unless a miracle occurs. 3 years ago, recognizing this country's overwhelming determination to stay out of other people's wars, Congress by a large majority adopted and President Roosevelt signed the Neutrality Act. It was designed to guard against the mistaken steps we took in 1915 and 16. Now the President has just made to Congress a number of recommendations to strengthen the original purposes of the Neutrality Act, such as, for instance, a regulation that will keep Americans and American ships out of the danger zones. All such recommendations have the wholehearted support of the people of this country. The real difference of opinion arises over the proposal that Congress shall repeal the embargo on guns and ammunition and permit their sale to nations at war. Let me repeat, there is no dispute over strengthening the Neutrality Act. The sole question is, shall the Neutrality Act be scuttled by repealing the embargo on arms? Let us pull the truth right out into the open. This question involves peace or war. If Congress repeals the arms embargo now, it will do so to aid one side in the present European war. That is what we did in 1915, and that is what took us into the war in 1917. Every country in the world would at once recognize such a step for what it was, our taking sides with one of the warring groups. From that moment, there could be no such thing as our being out of the war. It would be only a question of how far and how fast we get into it. It is beyond my comprehension how anyone can argue that we're helping to keep America out of war by turning our country into a munitions factory. The eventual issue raised by the embargo question is, shall we become involved in the war in Europe? No sane American would seriously propose that it is our job to save anybody's empire. And certainly no thoughtful American would urge that we should enter the European war now to save humanity. Humanity has suffered in recent years when it might have been easier to help it. Humanity has been bombed and gassed in the uplands of Abyssinia, on the farms and in the cities of China, and in the arid plains and mountains of Spain. Not bombing in a relatively equal fight, but in the rush of well-equipped battalions and squadrons against primitive people with a spear, against nations struggling to modernize their institutions, and against a society torn by civil strife. Then was a time when, if ever, the appeal to humanity should have had the greatest force. But those appeals were then unanswered by those who now make them in their own extremity. I do not criticize. No man or woman speaking in this safe and blessed land has the moral right to criticize those who are charged with the terrifying responsibility of leading a people dwelling in the teeming lands of Europe or Asia. An appeal to enlist in a crusade, especially against brutal dictatorships, strikes a responsive chord in the warm hearts of the American people. The desire to see the tyranny of dictatorship ended whether those dictators be red, black, or brown, springs from America's deep-rooted love of liberty. And I yield to no one in loathing of dictatorship as a denial of the free principles upon which America was founded. But we must not fool ourselves into thinking that we can help fight dictators in Europe and still stay out of war. A nation cannot be half in and half out of war. We either go in or we stay out. Our own experience should have taught us that cash and carry before very long would become charge it and carry it too. We must not make the tragic error of thinking that Europe only wants just war supplies. That comes first. Soon it will be ships and then millions of Americans in another AEF. 6 months ago, while I was in France, I asked one of the highest officials of that country what they expected from the United States in the event of war. He instantly shot back the reply, supplies and men. What shall we gain by crushing dictatorship in Europe if we get one here? Let me turn for a moment to my father's experience. At the height of American enthusiasm for the last war, he never wavered in his repeated predictions that that war would be followed not just by more wars, but by the worst economic collapse the world had yet known. He never claimed to be a prophet, but he was a student. He knew history. He knew that nations could not destroy millions of productive human beings and billions in wealth without paying the inevitable price in poverty and depression. Remember the last war. We got in only at the end, yet it cost us $50 billion and thousands of American casualties. Now look at the world today. With the enormous load of debt the world now carries, together with a frightful increase in the cost and destructiveness of war, we can take it as a foregone conclusion that a prolonged war will end in bankruptcy. But worse, what will it do to America after the war is over? If we get into this war, think what it will mean at the end. Farm prices will drop to nothing. Factories will close. Millions of returning soldiers we'll swell the army of unemployed to gigantic size. Then, worst of all, those who sow the seeds of racial, religious, and class hatred will feed and fatten on our despair. Every scoundrel, anxious to exploit degraded aspects of human nature, would find a thousandfold increase in the fields he can till if we make hatred respectable by joining in war. Make no mistake, we do not go into war in one jump. We get there step by step. Once we take that first fatal step, the same one we took 25 years ago, of trying to help one side, we are headed for war. But perhaps worse, are we not headed for the destruction of our own American freedom? The stability and future of America does not depend on the victory or defeat of any other nation anywhere in the world. They depend on what we do here at home. That is why, in all that has been said, I still await for word about America and American problems. It is shocking to discover the eagerness with which some of us have dropped our own unfinished tasks here at home and turned our backs on the problems that gave us 10 million unemployed. Millions of distressed farmers and millions of young and old who face tonight still another winter with a scanty and uncertain living in this land of plenty. In our excitement over wars in Europe and Asia, are we forgetting America? Are we forgetting that our task is not for ourselves alone, but for every people of hope everywhere? If we are to be helpful to the world in the years to come, we must not forget that our first task is to safeguard our own people here at home and the principles and ideals in which they believe. You have heard of the forgotten man. Does that forgotten man now live in a forgotten country? I repeat, does that forgotten man now live in a forgotten country? Ladies and gentlemen, when your senators and congressmen vote for or against wrecking the Neutrality Act, they will be taking the first long step on the road to war or peace. You have elected them to decide for you, but you owe it to your conscience and your country to take your own stand on one side or the other of this life and death front. There can be no alibis. This is not an issue where just a few chosen experts alone know the answers. This great issue is not a competition in brains. It is a test of character. Once the floodgates are opened, the fences and those who sit on them will be swept ruthlessly along over the precipice. Mothers and fathers, you who have brought life into the world, what do you think? Your voice is more important than all the statesmen and leaders in all countries. Speak up for yourselves and your children. Young men and women, you who dream of finding a useful place in the life of your country, where your creative gifts can help America again become the beacon light of the world, you who would pay the bloody price for the mistakes of politicians, speak up for young America. You who are older, doctors, teachers, nurses, ministers of all faiths, workers and tillers of the soil, you who have the wisdom of experience, speak up and give your country guidance in this critical hour. Americans all, you still hold in your hands the power to guide the destiny of this great land. Use it, America, speak up.